Part 1, Chapter 5. The first dawn light was painting High Peak rose. It was going to be a beautiful day. Johnny Goodboy was completing the packing of a lead horse. Windsplitter was sidling about, biting at the grass, but not really eating. He had his eye on Johnny. They were obviously going somewhere, and Windsplitter was not going to be left out. Some wisps of smoke were coming from the breakfast fire of the Jimson family nearby. They were roasting a dog. Yesterday, at the funeral feast, nearly a score of dogs had gotten into an idiot fight. There had been plenty of bones and meat as well, but the pack had gotten into a fight and a big brindle had been killed. Looked like the Jimson family would have meat all day. Johnny was trying to keep his mind on petty details and off Chrissy and Patty, who were standing there watching him quietly. Brown Limper Staffer was also there, idling about in the background. He had a club foot and should have been killed at birth. But he was the only child the Staffers had ever had, and Staffer was parson after all. Maybe mayor, too, since there wasn't any now. There was no affection whatever between Johnny and Brown Limper. During the funeral dancing, Brown had sat on the sidelines making sneering remarks about the dancing, about the funeral, about the meat, about the strawberries. But when he had made a remark about Johnny's father...
Maybe never had a bone in the right place.
Johnny had hit him a backhand cuff. Made Johnny ashamed of himself, hitting a cripple. Brown Limper stood crookedly, a faint blue bruise on his cheek, watching Johnny get ready. Wishes of bad luck written all over him. Two other boys of similar age, there were only five in the whole village who were in their late teens, wandered up and asked Brown what was going on. Brown shrugged. Johnny kept his mind carefully on his business. He was probably taking too much, but he didn't know what he'd run into. Nobody knew. In the two buckskin sacks he was roping on either side of the lead horse, he had flintstones for fire, rats' nests for tinder, bundles of cut thongs, some sharp-edged rocks that were sometimes hard to find and cut indifferently well, three spare kill clubs, one heavy enough to crush a bear's skull, just in case, some warm robes that didn't stink very much, a couple of buckskins for spare clothes. He gave a start. He hadn't realized Chrissy had come within a foot of him. He hoped he wouldn't have to talk. Blackmail. That's what it was. Plain as possible and all bad. If she'd said she would kill herself if he didn't come back, well, one could have put that down to girl vaporings. But threatening to follow him in a year put another shadow on it entirely. It meant he would have to be cautious. He'd have to be careful not to get himself killed. It was one thing to worry about his own life. He didn't care a snap for risk or danger. But the thought of Chrissy going down on the plains if he didn't come back made him snow cold at the pit of his stomach. She'd be gored or mauled or eaten alive. And every agonizing second of it would be Johnny's fault. She had effectively committed him to caution and care. Just what she intended. She was holding something out to him. Two somethings. One was a large bone needle with a thong hole in it, and the other was a skin awl. Both were worn and polished and valuable.
They were Mama's,
said Chrissy.
I don't need anything.
No, you have them.
I won't need them.
If you lose your clothes,
she wailed.
How are you going to sew?
The crowd had thickened. Johnny didn't need any outbursts. He snatched the needle and awl out of her hand and unlashed the neck of a sack and dropped them in, made sure they hadn't missed and dropped out, and then relashed the sack. Chrissy stood more quietly. Johnny turned and faced her. He was a little bit shocked. There wasn't even a smudge of color in her face. She looked like she hadn't slept and had tick fever as well. Johnny's resolution wavered. Then beyond Chrissy, he saw Brown Limper tittering and talking behind his hand to Petey Tomso. Johnny's face went tight. He grabbed Chrissy and kissed her hard. It was as though he had taken a board from an irrigation trough. The tears went down her cheeks.
Now look, don't you follow me.
She made a careful effort to control her voice.
If you don't come back in a year, I will. By all the gods on High Peak, Johnny.
He looked at her. Then he beckoned to Windsplitter, who sidled over. With one smooth spring, he mounted, the lead rope of the other horse gripped in his hand.
You can have my other four horses,
said Johnny to Chrissy.
Don't eat them. They're trained.
He paused.
Unless you get awful hungry, of course, like in the winter.
Chrissy hung on to his leg for a moment, and then she stepped back and sagged. Johnny thumped Windsplitter with a heel, and they moved off. This was going to be no wild free ride to adventure. This was going to be a tiptoe scout with care. Chrissy had seen to that. At the entrance to the defile, he looked back. About 15 people were still standing there watching him go. They all looked dejected. He used a heel signal to make Windsplitter rear and waved his hand. They all waved back with sudden animation. Then Johnny was gone down the dark canyon trail to the wide and unknown plains. The rest of the people drifted off. Chrissy still stood there, hoping with a wild, crazy hope that he would ride into sight, returning. Patty tugged at her leg.
Chrissy! Chrissy, will he come back?
Chrissy's voice was very low, her eyes like ashes in a dead fire.
Goodbye,
she whispered.